A Stitch in Time saves the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The Medicare podcast that once shared a jail cell with Otis. And now, wondering exactly why junior high became middle school, it's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. It's time for the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. We are happy to bring you good news about Medicare. The good news is it hasn't gone broke yet. The politicians seem to be leaving it alone. And we are going to dedicate the rest of our lives, or at least our careers. When I say we, I'm talking about me, myself, and I. That's three of us, at least. We're dedicating ourselves to helping you transition from Obamacare to Medicare, from regular health insurance to old people's health insurance. And we think you're pretty much going to like what you find once you get across that line. And hopefully we can do this without any trepidation, without any errors that will haunt you for years, and without any unhappiness. So that's the goal here. And it's all based on my book, Medicare for the Lazy Man. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever, is on sale at Amazon.com in any of three permutations. And if you like bright, colorful illustrations, it's also on sale in paperback form at BarnesandNoble.com. So if you are the kind of person that likes to read your paperback with bright, colorful illustrations and keep that as a lifelong heirloom to pass down to your children, then go to Barnes & Noble. If you want the regular black and white illustrations, or you want a Kindle ebook, or you want an audiobook where I can talk to you through the whole process, then go to Amazon.com and look up Medicare for the Lazy Man. Now, typically at this time of the day, I would introduce knob twister par excellence, Randy Carson, but I'm not sure if he's going to be capable of making a contribution to this episode because he seems to be suffering from some sort of ailment. It's either a cold or some sort of virus of some kind. I guess a cold would be a virus. So let's see if he can join in any meaningful way at all. Randy, are you there?
Well, I don't think I'm ready to sing just yet.
Oh, but you know, on behalf of the whole audience, thank you.
I never have been ready to sing, but I wanted to say hello to everybody because, obviously we are entering the holiday season, and I do so enjoy doing this podcast with Doug. And just wanted to say happy holidays to everybody. I'll be back better next week, but you guys go out and finish up your turkey, go into your normal tryptophan high, and we will talk to you again next week. And I'm going to turn it back over to Mr. Jones.
All righty. I love hearing from Randy when he's not sick, and it's an extra effort for him today, but I'm glad he did make the effort. So thank you, Randy. I was reminded of one of my favorite jokes. I can't tell you which podcast episode it was that I introduced this joke, but I was reminded of it recently by two of my favorite newer clients, Ken and Shelley. They moved from California to Missouri. And so we've had some back and forths about the various coverages. Should they make any changes? And why is the insurance environment in Missouri different than the insurance environment in California? And they're getting settled, and they're so happy to be surrounded by relatives. They just finished Thanksgiving, enjoyed it with a bunch of family members that they didn't get to see as often when they lived in California. And so I was talking to them about dental, vision, and hearing coverage, and they're deciding whether or not to go with dental, vision, and hearing coverage. And Shelley made the assumption, or she made the statement, that she married an engineer. And I've always thought of Ken as being more of a security expert or electronics guy. I didn't think of him as an engineer. And then they got into a friendly marital spat about how one addresses a glass, whether it's half full or half empty. I'll have to go back and read what Ken said, the engineer, but it reminded me that an engineer also regards the use of tools as sacrosanct. And the joke I heard that I still enjoy very much was that an engineer always uses the proper tool for a given job. And number two in that set of rules is that a hammer can always be the correct tool to use. And then number three, if a hammer isn't available, anything else can substitute for a hammer. And it seems like there was more to that joke because I was yucking it up the last time Randy was yucking it up the last time I told it. I could watch him enjoy that magnificently constructed joke. I think I might have left something out this time. So I'm sure I'll hear from Ken if he knows the joke. Anyway, I thought I would look at what Medicare does for end of life. And that led me to a rabbit hole of article after article after article of how various people and various medical professionals like to think about end of life stuff. And in fact, that led me to a huge stack of short articles. And so I thought I might share some of what I'm uncovering with you, because people will be facing end of life problems at one point or another. And in fact, many people that are listening to this audience right now, I'm sure have helped their relatives or parents through that end of life time. That it's a kind of a mystery. I know it made me very uncomfortable. I was, my parents, one of them dropped dead, and the other one dragged it out for a long, long time. And I was not comfortable with either scenario. And since we are a family of Southerners and English people to boot, nobody really talked much about it at all. So maybe talking about the end of life is something that might make people feel better about the whole thing. So I've got a little article here, and it's entitled "When Prolonging Death Seems Worse Than Death." And this article, along with most of the other ones in the series that I'm going to foist upon you, is old. It's about 9 years old, but I think it probably still has as much value today as it had when it was written. So the article goes on to say, many of us think of death as the worst possible outcome for a terminally ill patient, but Judith Schwartz disagrees. Schwartz, a patient supporter at the nonprofit Compassion and Choices, says prolonging death can be a far worse fate. For many patients, good palliative or hospice care can alleviate suffering, yet a small but significant proportion of dying patients suffer intolerably, she writes. Nobody makes this choice unless the burdens of living have consistently, day after day, outweighed all benefit. Compassion and Choices is an organization that helps terminally ill patients and their families make informed and thoughtful end-of-life decisions to hasten a patient's death. Oh, I didn't see that coming. These decisions are not made impulsively, Schwartz tells Fresh Air's Terry Gross. I don't know who Fresh Air is. I think that's part of the article series is an organization named Fresh Air. Anyway, nobody makes this choice unless the burdens of living have so consistently, day after day, outweighed all benefit. Schwartz notes that her organization does not help patients kill themselves, and their work should not be confused with assisted suicide. They are dying, she says. They are on a dying trajectory. The only choice they have is the circumstances of their death and what kind of disability they will be suffering as they approach that time. Compassion and Choices supports the right to die, but does not work outside the limits of the law, which varies from one state to another. There are now three states, Washington, Oregon, and Montana, where in certain instances, it's legal for doctors to prescribe medication to hasten death. Now, again, this article is written in 2012. So it's right now it's 9 years old. As patients and their families make these excruciating decisions, they consult with doctors who evaluate their end-of-life options. Making decisions to hasten death requires a tremendous act of love on the part of the family, Schwartz says, because actually what this patient is doing is leaving them, and leaving them perhaps sooner than their disease would require. people who think that they want to be able to, for example, take a lethal amount of medication to end their life, they speculate that that's how they're going to feel. But they actually don't know how they're going to feel when they get to the point where their quality of life is so diminished that they really wish they were dead, that they would not wake up the next morning. But to take that step, to take that final step to cause your own death in one very dramatic act is very, very hard. And most people don't do that. On existential distress and medical prescriptions to hasten dying, that's the title of this next paragraph. The Oregon Death with Dignity Act has been around for 14 years. So that would have been from the prior millennium, from the 1990s. It's been around for 14 years, and the primary reasons for patients asking their physician for this prescription have remained consistent over all those years. It's not about pain. Pain can actually be managed. That's not why people want to hasten their dying. They do it because they're not able to do any of the things that they always enjoyed doing that give them any kind of pleasure. They can't do these things anymore, and they have a complete loss of autonomy. They're dependent upon other people to care for them, and they feel that they've lost all dignity. You have to understand, this is what Schwartz is saying to this Terry Gross person. You have to understand that this doesn't matter for everybody, but for those people that it does matter to, it matters profoundly. This is really what we think of as sort of existential distress, the meaninglessness of having to just wait for death to occur. I suppose it's a comforting position to take, but it doesn't really speak to the nature of suffering, and it doesn't speak to the patient's wish to be treated with dignity and to be heard. We talk about ethical principles of beneficence and non-maleficence, that death is deemed the worst possible outcome that should be prevented at all costs. Well, I beg to differ, Schwartz says. There are many people for whom death is not the worst thing that could happen to them. In fact, prolonging their dying is the worst thing that could happen to them. And the notion of healing in that environment strikes me as a bit of a one-sided understanding of the relationship. And that's the end of that article. I guess it was taken from a radio interview, but remember the title of the article was When Prolonging Death Seems Worse Than Death. So that's pretty dramatic, but anyway, one person's view of end of life stuff. So back to Randy. Randy seems to have had a little nap, and he looks much more chipper.
Actually, I got a little bit of shut eye, and I'm ready to go now. I know the audience is going to be really disappointed, but I'm still not ready to sing.
Oh, boy. Well, maybe next time. That'll give everybody a reason to come back to our next podcast episode.
Yeah, to hear Randy attempt to sing our new jingle.
Yeah, we have a jingle?
No, but...
All right, well, anything you sing could be named as our new jingle. We'll see how good it is.
In my head, we have a new jingle.
There you go.
But I think that's my cold. I think that's my cold.
Oh, well, anyway, how are the crickets feeling today?
We have 6 minutes to go.
That's incredibly stupid. How did I not recognize that that article was going to go that quickly? What I should do is tell you to pause the whole thing while I get some mailbag items. How does that?
All right, we can do that. I will pause it right now.
Ready. Recording in progress. My favorite words in the English language, at least today. So Randy paused us so that I could go across the office and find my mailbag items that I brought from Illinois. So let me talk about the first one, which is a letter sent in by a woman named Julie. And this is back in August of 2021. Julie says, "Hi, Doug. I bought and read your book, Medicare for the Lazy Man, and watched one of your podcasts." She watched one. Oh, are we? Do we have podcasts up on YouTube?
Oh yeah, we do.
Oh, the good news is nobody can see us on YouTube.
Right? That's true. The only thing you can watch is the still picture that we have is associated with it.
Excellent. Excellent. Is that hopefully the cover of the book, maybe?
Yes, it is.
Okay, good. So anyway, Julie says, "I found them both so helpful, the book and the podcast episode. Unfortunately, I'm a bit of a dunce. And so I was wondering if you could please answer a couple of my questions. I hope you don't find them too silly. Sue, my husband and I will both be turning 65 next April. My understanding is that we should both apply for Medicare Part A in January, and then our Medicare Part A would begin April 1st. Is that correct? Also, I plan to work until 66 and a half. Currently, my employer pays most of my health, probably her health insurance. I think you mentioned that a person can wait until they're done working to drop their health insurance I have from work. Is that correct? I am paying about $315 a month for health, vision, and dental for both my husband and me combined, and my employer is paying the rest. That's a pretty good deal if she's got coverage that she likes. As far as supplemental insurance goes, my husband and I are both fairly healthy. It sounds like you recommend a high deductible Plan G supplement. Is that correct? Do we just call an insurance agent and tell them we want HDG? Well, you know, if you don't want to deal with me, you could. But frankly, here I am. Anyway, also, we are each on one blood pressure med only. Do you think we should wait a while to go on Part D as in dog? You can do Part D anytime, right? Thank you so much, Doug, and thank you for helping those of us who are easily overwhelmed by all of this. I just want to make sure that we're doing the most we can for our money. I appreciate any advice you can give me. And she actually works in some sort of a medical setting, patient hospitalization program. So I said, thank you very much for writing. Your understanding about applying for Part A 3 months more or less before April 1st is correct. It's not imperative, but it will eventually help you enroll in Part B that much more easily. You can go either way next April, but if you have no big objections to the cost or benefit structure of your employer health insurance plan, I see no compelling reason to disenroll from your group plan until you're preparing for retirement. I highly recommend HDG as an excellent alternative for those who don't want to pay more for insurance protection than necessary. It is the type of plan that my wife and I have been on since we turned age 65. Boy, the math scares me when I think about how old I am. And it has served us well. The plan HDG has served us very well, both my wife and me. The important thing to remember is I want to be your agent. I will be happy to follow your instructions if you and I disagree, but I have a feeling that will not be the case. Considering drug plans, you may also delay the purchase of a drug plan until retirement without penalty or negative consequence. This year, the least expensive prescription drug plan is about $7.30 per month, so that is what you might expect in the future. Please let me know if there's any other way in which I can assist you. Well, ironically, she wrote me yesterday. I haven't had a chance to address her new questions, but she is waiting in my mailbox for another response. So I think she came up with more questions. And then we have a Catherine who wrote in, and this is also in August of 2021. She said, "Hello, Mr. Jones. I have a question about Medicare managed care, specifically Trustmark. Are you able to explain what Trustmark is? I can't seem to make any sense of it. Thank you." And then she sent me a whole bunch of disclaimers, but this might be stuff that was just attached to her her message. I might not have anything to do with that Trustmark that she asked about. The whole thing about Trustmark, the only Trustmark I know is an insurance company that's located north of Chicago along the North Shore. I think it might be Lake Forest. It started out as a very small health insurance company, and it's grown over the years. It's got a very attractive building, and they have several group insurance products, and they probably have individual health insurance products as well. If that's connected to the Trustmark she wants, I don't know. So here was my answer to her. I said, "Hey, thank you for writing. There is a Trustmark insurance company headquartered in Illinois, and that word may also be applied to a series of insurance products marked by Blue Cross Blue Shield in Massachusetts and other places, as I vaguely recall. Unfortunately, I don't have exact knowledge about the Trustmark Medicare plans you might be referring to. However, you used a very specific term, managed care. When we speak about the two types of insurance people can buy when they are eligible for Medicare, only one can be described as a managed care type of plan. That would be Medicare Advantage plan. Managed care plans involve networks of providers, restrictions on access to specialists, and other elements that allow them to manage the care their customers seek to retrieve or receive. The other type of Medicare insurance, Medicare supplements, or Medigap plans, as some people call them, they have no managed care elements, and they offer a high degree of freedom of choice when it comes to seeking treatment from any provider willing to accept Medicare payment. These are the plans that I recommend and sell, the ones with the complete freedom of choice. I hope this was at least somewhat helpful. Thank you very much for writing. And she did say, thank you so much for the information. So I'm inclined to think that I adequately addressed her question. And once again, Randy has gone away. I rely on him to tell me the time, not because I don't know how to tell time, more because I don't ever put a watch in front of me or a clock.
We are out of time.
Okay. We've outlived our, outstayed our welcome for today then. Huh?
We have used, I tried, I called the operator. I picked up the receiver. I tried desperately to put a couple more quarters in the phone. She
next
said,
time,
no, no.
Next time, try singing to her.
Oh, I knew that wasn't going to work. So I tried the quarters.
I see. Well, I'm just as happy to end the thing now because I want you to be able to rest up for our next recording episode.
We will definitely do that. And I was going to just mention to the people, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for putting up with my little froggy voice because I don't normally sound like this. Or maybe I do. I don't know. But it doesn't sound the same to me in my head. So anyway, long story short is thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate every one of you every time you listen. But in the meantime, you have just spent about 32 and a half minutes listening to Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma, and now the guy from Illinois, one house lighter, and the CEO, CIO, and CFO, and every other O for Medicare for the Lazy Man.com.
Bye-bye.